I'm going to share this morning. You've seen the title of the message, A Kingdom of Priests. A lot of history I'm going to share this morning. And history was not my favorite class when I was in school. I did not like history. I almost failed history. My teacher finally came to me. This was in my senior year. She said, Marcus, if you don't pass your test, I can't pass you. And so I just said that to say this, that I did not like history, but I do now. And for you people who don't like history, if you're young or old, I hope you will appreciate it a little bit. If you don't now, maybe later you will. I had to think of the children of Israel. They went from place to place. They were told at various times to make a pile of rocks. And they told them, God through Moses told them specifically, said, when your children ask, what's this pile of rocks for? Then you tell them. They wanted to preserve their history and make sure that their children and their young people knew what God had done for them and was continuing to do for them. So history is a wonderful tool if we neglect it. And I wish I would have paid more attention in history class, especially the things concerning our country, our past presidents, you know, when they served and what they stood for, and the way that our Congress and our House of Representatives, the way our government works. And sad to say, it doesn't work many times in our time. But I wish I would have paid a little bit more attention to that so I could understand that better. But it is what it is. This subject came to me, I don't know, several months ago. I read this about the Lord calling us to be kings and priests. And we're going to get into the New Testament at the very close of the message, so please stick with me. The reason I changed that title a little bit is because there was two different translations that changed that into a kingdom of priests. They said kings in the Old Testament, kings were not priests. That was not their office. And two different translations translated this as a kingdom of priests. I'm going to start in the book of Exodus, and I'm going to spend a lot of time in Exodus and Leviticus. Just different passages here and there concerning the priests and how they became a priest and what their duties and responsibilities were and so on. Exodus chapter 19 is where we're going to start. And many of these are just short passages and some a little bit longer. Exodus 19, the first six verses, this was in the very beginning of the calling of the priest's office. In the third month, when the children of Israel were gone forth out of the land of Egypt, the same day came they unto the wilderness of Sinai, for they were departed from Rephidim, and were come to the desert of Sinai, and had pitched in the wilderness, and there Israel camped before the mount. And Moses went up unto God, and the Lord called unto him out of the mountain, this was the Mount Sinai, saying, thus shalt thou say unto the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, ye have seen what I did unto the Egyptians, and how I bare you on eagle's wings, and brought you unto myself. Now therefore, if ye will obey my voice indeed, and keep my covenant, then ye shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people, for all the earth is mine. We're going to read that verse a little bit later in 1 Peter, where that passage is also repeated, a peculiar treasure. Verse 6, and ye shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and an holy nation. These are the words which thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel. So this was the very beginning. After they had come from Egypt and they were traveling towards the promised land, I did a lot of reading, so if I get them mixed up a little bit. But this was the start of a new year for them. And this was a new beginning for them, 100%. Verse 22 yet in this chapter. And let the priests also which come near to the Lord sanctify themselves, lest the Lord break forth upon them. So this was, here the priests were mentioned. That's the wrong verse there. In chapter 28, just one verse I want to pick up here, a couple of verses. Chapter 28. As I was going through here with all these references, I wished that I had the know-how and the technology to have that all up on here in the screen. It would save us a little time, but I don't. So we'll go through. Chapter 28, first two verses. And take thou unto thee Aaron, thy brother, and his sons with him. And there was, from what I could gather at this point, there was four of them. From among the children of Israel, that he may minister unto me in the priest's office, even Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, and Eleazar, and Ithamar, Aaron's sons. And thou shalt make holy garments for Aaron thy brother, for glory and for beauty. So here we can see Aaron, and we know that the tribe of Levi was installed, instructed to take care of the temple and all the proceedings there. And so Aaron and his sons at this point, but that's where all the priests came from Aaron's ancestors. And also I want to make note here that in verse 2, that they were dressed differently than the others. I think in one of our other references, we will touch on that a little bit, but I'm not going to go into detail. But they were dressed differently. In our time, in our day and age, when we see a Catholic priest, we know, pretty much know, that that's a Catholic priest. I'm not advocating that our ministers dress differently. But they did in their time. So they were recognized. People knew who they were and what their office were in Old Testament time. Going now to Leviticus chapter 21. We'll come back to the book of Exodus. I tried to put markers in here so I wouldn't spend a lot of your time going from passage to passage. Leviticus 21, reading verses 10 through 15. And he that is the high priest among his brethren, among whose head the anointing oil was poured, and that is consecrated to put on the garments, shall not uncover his head, nor rend his clothes, neither shall he go into any dead body, nor defile himself for his father or for his mother, neither shall he go out of the sanctuary, nor profane the sanctuary of his God. For the crown of the anointing oil of his God is upon him. I am the Lord. And he shall take a wife in her virginity, a widow or a divorced woman or profane or an harlot. These shall he not take, but he shall take a virgin of his own people to wife. Neither shall he profane his seed among his people, for I, the Lord, do sanctify him. So these were some rules and some guidelines for a priest. What he should do and not do, and they were very specific. The priests were a special people. A verse here out of Ezra. You don't need to turn to this one. Chapter 7 and verse 24. Also we certify you that touching any of the priests and Levites, singers, porters, nethinims, or ministers of his house of God, it shall not be lawful to impose toll, tribute, or custom upon them. I don't know. Have any of you ministers been exempt from paying taxes? Here they were not. They were not to pay. The priests were not to pay any taxes. So they were special people. They were exempt from some things. Going back now to the book of Exodus in chapter 28. Some of these passages I'm going to skip through. I'm not going to read everything, but skip through and pick up just a few different things. 36, verse 36 here of Exodus 28. Thou shalt make a plate, and this was part of their garment, a plate of pure gold and engrave or carve, we would say, upon him, like the engravings of a signet, holiness to the Lord. And thou shalt put it on a blue lace, that it may be upon the mitre, upon the forefront of the mitre it shall be, and it shall be upon Aaron's forehead, that Aaron may bear the iniquity of the holy things which the children of Israel shall hallow in all their holy gifts, and it shall be always upon his forehead, that they may be accepted before the Lord. Here he had a special hat. Head covering of some kind upon his head, it said, at all times. So whenever he went out in public, he was to wear this again as a sign of who he was and what he stood for. Verse 39, thou shalt embroider the coat of the linen, and thou shalt make the mitre of fine linen, and shalt make the girdle of needlework. And for Aaron's sons thou shalt make coats, and thou shalt make for them girdles, and bonnets shalt thou make for them for glory and for beauty. And thou shalt put them upon Aaron, thy brother, and his sons with him, and shalt anoint them and consecrate them and sanctify them, that they may minister unto me in the priest's office. And thou shalt make them linen breeches to cover their nakedness, from the loins even unto the thighs they shall reach. And they shall be upon Aaron and upon his sons when they come in unto the tabernacle of the congregation, or when they come near unto the altar to minister in the holy place, that they bear not iniquity and die. This was serious. It shall be a statute forever unto them and his seed after him. This was not taken very lightly. In our Sunday school class, was touched upon the red heifer and all that meant. That was interesting to me. There was times and I would have shut that out, but that was very interesting to me. Thank you for sharing that. Aaron and his sons, they were sanctified. They were special. They were dressed differently. They stood out. They were not ashamed for what they wore and what they represented. 1 Peter 2:9, but ye are a chosen generation, a holy nation, a peculiar people. Why? Why were they called to be different? Why are we called to be different? That ye should show forth the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. Don't be ashamed to be different. When I was younger, I wanted to fit in. I didn't want to stand out. I didn't want to be different. And I'm talking about before I was married and doing some of the things I should not have done. I wanted to blend in. I didn't want it to be different. Nowadays, it doesn't bother me at all when people say, are you a Mennonite? Are you Amish? It doesn't bother me. I'm glad to be able to say, yes, I am. But I am more than that. I am more than a Mennonite. It was a serious calling. How serious was this? Again, some of the rules. This is comes out of Leviticus chapter 10. These are some of the rules that they were to follow. The first six verses here. Leviticus chapter 10. And Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, took either of them his censer and put fire therein and put incense thereon and offered strange fire before the Lord, which he commanded them not. So these are how serious that this calling was for them. They disobeyed. They were not doing what they were supposed to do. Verse 2, and there went out fire from the Lord and devoured them, and they died before the Lord. Then Moses said unto Aaron, This is that the Lord spake, saying, I will be sanctified in them that come nigh me, and before all the people I will be glorified. And Aaron held his peace. And Moses called Mishael and Eliphan, the sons of Uzziel, the uncle of Aaron, and said unto them, come near, carry your brethren from before the sanctuary out of the camp. So they went near and carried them in their coats out of the camp, as Moses had said. And Moses said unto Aaron and unto Eleazar and unto Ithamar his son, uncover not his head, uncover not your heads, neither rend your clothes, lest ye die, and lest wrath come upon all the people. But let your brethren, the whole house of Israel, bewail the burning which the Lord hath kindled. This was serious for them, and they did things not according to what the rules and regulations were, and they paid for it with their life. If we skip through the rest of this chapter, Lord, in verse 8, the Lord spake unto Aaron, saying, and these were Aaron's sons that died because they were disobedient. And as fathers, we could well imagine how sad Aaron must have been. But Moses, in effect, told him, they broke the rules. It was their decision, not yours. They broke the rules. And I'm not sure what all verses to read here. I wanted to touch upon a certain verse. Anyways, when after Moses explained this to Aaron, it says Aaron held his peace. Aaron understood that it was because of his son's disobedience that they died. Leviticus chapter 16. They were to offer sacrifices once a year. And a couple of weeks ago, I think I mentioned that we say that. And I'm not standing here and saying that we're wrong when we say that. But technically, we are wrong because it was twice a year. And I couldn't find exactly if there was any time elapsed between the time when the priest went into the temple for his own sins and then he went in after that for the sins of the people. I don't know. It just says then. So I don't know how much, if any, time elapsed between that. But this was a great responsibility that they carried. Leviticus 16. And the Lord spake unto Moses after the death of his two sons of Aaron, when they offered before the Lord and died. So this, mentioned here in Leviticus as well as in Exodus. So this was not something that was taken lightly. It was not something that they soon forgot. And the Lord said unto Moses, speak unto Aaron thy brother, that he come not at all times. And I think that's saying that he was not to come into that holy place. It was not to be a regular thing for him. It was not an everyday thing. I think that would be the proper expression. It was not an everyday thing for the priest to go into the Holy of Holies. He come not into the holy place within the veil before the mercy seat, which is upon the ark, that he die not, for I will appear in the cloud upon the mercy seat. Thus shall Aaron come into the holy place with a young bullock. And this was touched on this morning about the different offerings and sacrifices that they had to make. And so I'm not going to get into that, but be it they had bullock as mentioned, goat. We know that sometimes they came with a pigeon. Sometimes they came with the first fruits of their crops, but they were to make offerings, but was not this time was not to be coming into the holy place was not to be an everyday thing. He shall put on the linen clothes and so forth, going down to verse 6. And Aaron shall offer his bullock of the sin offering, which is for himself, and making an atonement for himself and for his house. So I would take that to mean that for him and his family, he was to go into the holy place and make this offering to the Lord. Verse 11, and Aaron shall bring the bullock of the sin offering, which is for himself, and shall make an atonement for himself and for his house, and shall kill the bullock of the sin offering, which is for himself. So it's mentioned a number of times here that this was for himself. And then verse 15, then it says, then. And there, I don't know how much time elapsed between the time when he went in for himself and his family and the time when he went in for the people. Then shall he kill the goat of the sin offering that is for the people and bring his blood within the veil and do with the blood as he did with the blood of the bullock and sprinkle it upon the mercy seat and before his mercy seat. And somewhere in this reading it mentioned that they were to sprinkle it seven times. I don't know if it was in different directions or upon different things, but it was very specific what they should do. Verse 20. And when he hath made an end of reconciling the holy place and the tabernacle of the congregation and the altar, he shall bring the live goat. And Aaron shall lay both his hands upon the head of the live goat and confess over him all, notice, all the iniquities of the children of Israel and all their trespasses and all their sins, putting them upon the head of the goat, and shall send him away by the hand of a fit man unto the wilderness. That stood out to me. And I'm not exactly sure, but it says he was to a fit man. I would take that to mean somebody that was young and strong, healthy. And somebody else recently, I don't remember who it was, just recently across the pulpit here, one of our visiting ministers mentioned that they threw that goat off of a high cliff. Now, that's not mentioned here, but it did mention they take that scapegoat out into the wilderness. In other words, he removed all the sins of the people were put upon the head of that scapegoat, and it was removed from the camp far away. Took him out to the wilderness. If they killed him there, threw him off a cliff, I'm not sure. But it was not to come back. It was put away from them. So that was one of their responsibilities. And I would say that was probably, shall I say, a highlight, or at least something that was very important throughout the year for the children of Israel, and especially for the priest. Going back to Exodus chapter 12. I don't think I'll be reading much here, because this is quite familiar. This is concerning the Passover. I think that's familiar to most all of us. Where they were to, the night before they left Egypt, where they were to take a lamb, a young lamb that was spotless of the first year. It was supposed to be a yearling. And they were to kill it and to put the blood upon the doorpost top and on both sides. And that was to, so the death angel would pass over, would bypass that house. And so anyone that was in that house was protected. I noticed verse 38 here, and I'm not exactly sure. I did not dig into this. Where after they left then, all the children of Israel left. We know that Pharaoh was upset, shall we say it that way? Pharaoh was broken, finally. God broke him. And he said, get out. All of you, get out. Verse 38 says, and a mixed multitude went up also with them, and flocks and herds, even very much cattle. So they took all their possessions with them, even borrowed jewelry and so forth from the Egyptians, and they took that with them as well. They, I would say, pretty much stripped the land and they left. And this mixed multitude, at first I thought as I read that, well, was, first of all, the mixed multitude, I think, were results of mixed marriages between the Israelites and the Egyptians. I wondered, well, was this mixed multitude, you know, say a family had a daughter that had married an Egyptian. If they were in the house, were they covered? I don't know. I can't answer that specifically. But reading the commentary, it says that later on, this mixed multitude, those were the people that caused Moses a lot of problems. And you can well imagine, even in our time, when a Protestant and a Catholic marry together, it causes problems. I'm not going to say yay or nay either way. If God leads, then so be it. But oftentimes, it doesn't go very well. Even when people, as is said, marry somebody from the wrong side of the tracks, you know, somebody that's not brought up like them, it causes problems. So again, I don't know who or what, I don't know all the details of this mixed multitude, but we do know that there were people that were not Jewish people that went with the children of Israel. And you can well imagine when they got out there in the wilderness and things got tough, there was probably some of those, maybe families were split. Maybe the husband said, I'm going back to my own people. You can do what you want. I don't know how that was, but very well, it caused them problems later on. It was an awesome responsibility for the priest to, first of all, stand between God and his family and do those offerings and offer the proper things and do it in the proper way. That was an awesome responsibility. And then to stand between God and all the rest of these people that were following them. I don't know if I can fully comprehend that. How would I feel if I was responsible for the salvation of all of Sturgis? That would, for me, would almost be more than I could handle to be responsible for them. But that's what the priest was to do. It was an awesome responsibility. We're going to go a little bit now and look at the misuse of the priest's office in 1 Samuel. And you probably know already where I'm going with this. Eli's sons were not what they should have been. And it tells us so very plainly. In 1 Samuel, the very first chapter, verse 3, and this man went up out of his city yearly to worship and to sacrifice in the Lord of hosts in Shiloh. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, the priests of the Lord, were there. So here it mentions two of his sons that were priests. Now going to chapter 2 and verse 12 through 17. Now the sons of Eli were sons of Belial. They were the sons of the devil, so it was plain speaking. They knew not the Lord. And the priest's custom with the people was that when any man offered sacrifice, the priest's servants came while the flesh was in seething, with a flesh hook or three teeth in his hand, and he struck it into the pan or kettle or cauldron or pot. All that the flesh hook brought up, the priest took for himself. So they did in Shiloh unto all the Israelites that came thither. And also before they burnt the fat, the priest's servants came and said to the men that sacrificed, give flesh to roast for the priest, for he will not have sodden flesh of thee, but raw. And if any man said unto him, Let them not fail to burn the fat presently, and then take as much as the soul desireth. Then he would answer him. This was the priest would answer him. No, but thou shalt give it me now, and if not, I will take it by force. Wherefore, the sin of the young men was very great before the Lord, for men abhorred the offering of the Lord. There was people that actually, looked down upon these two priests, made fun of them, or the priest's office was not looked highly upon because they were selfish and they refused to do it the way that the law had commanded them. Now going over to chapter 4 in verse 4. So the people sent to Shiloh that they might bring forth from thence the ark of the covenant of the Lord of hosts, which dwelleth between the cherubims, and the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were there with the ark of the covenant of God. So they were there fulfilling their office. And again, I don't know how much time had elapsed here. I don't know how long they had been priests at this point. And when the ark of the covenant of the Lord came into the camp, all Israel shouted with a great shout, so that the earth rang again. And when the Philistines heard the noise of the shout, and I don't know how far they were apart, but they heard it, they said, "What meaneth the noise of this great shout in the camp of the Hebrews?" And they understood that the ark of the Lord was come into the camp. And the Philistines were afraid, for they said, "God is come into the camp." And they said, "Woe unto us, for there hath not been such a thing heretofore. Woe unto us, who shall deliver us out of the hand of these mighty gods," capital G. "These are the gods that smote the Egyptians with all the plagues in the wilderness. Be strong and quit yourselves like men, O ye Philistine, that ye be not servants unto the Hebrews as they have been to you. Quit yourselves like men and fight." And the Philistines fought, and Israel was smitten, and they fled every man into his tent. And there was a very great slaughter, for there fell of Israel 30,000 footmen. And the ark was taken, and the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were slain. So this was a misuse of the priest's office. And again, they died because of that. They died in battle. Even though the Philistines came out of fear, they were afraid. In other words, they came knowing that they would be defeated. So they thought. But of course, God was in this, and God brought judgment upon Israel, I think largely because of the misuse of the priest's office in this case. Everything was going great for them. The Philistines were afraid, but alas, the sins of the young men caught up with them. And I think we could read into this also that here says 30,000 people died. Was it totally because of the sins of these two young men? Or I say young, I don't know how old they were. Was it because of that only? I don't know that. But they were not obedient. How long had this gone on? How long were these priests disobedient? How long had it been that they said, "No, we're not going to have your cooked, am I right? Cooked flesh. We're going to barbecue ours. That's the way we like it." Was not according to the law. And I don't know how long they had done that. May have been a case where they said, "We like this. This is the way we're going to do it now." And that maybe they did that for years. I don't know. But they were judged for it. Sin will always catch up with you and with me. Often at a time when we're not aware, at a time when we think not, it's going to catch up with us. And in this case, they died. Regardless, if you were a common person or a priest in our time, a CEO or president, again, in our time, a president's son, it will catch up with you at some point. So now, what does this all mean to us today? The veil of the holy place was torn. We've heard that often. You know, that the place where the priests could only go once a year. There I go saying it once a year, twice a year. That the place where he could only go twice a year was now split wide open. It says from top to bottom. It's split wide open. And we can go in there any time we want to. They were told that it was not to be a common thing for them. We can go in there any time we want to. In the middle of the night, when you wake up, something's on your mind. You can go into that place and you can talk with God and commune with Him there. In Matthew, and we're not going to turn to that passage. We will turn to Hebrews 10 a little bit. But I can't comprehend that. I can't comprehend the fact that the children of Israel, the people we know that had the outer court, the court of the women, the court of the men, where the Israelite men could go into, and then was the Holy of Holy. And how often would the men there in that outer court say, I wish I could go in there. I wonder what that's like in there. And they never could. They never could. Only the priest, the high priest, could go in there. And only at certain times. And that place that was so sacred and so hallowed, we can now go into. It's wide open. I've had to think already, and I don't know if I've ever heard anybody talk about this, but after Jesus was crucified and that veil was rent, what did the Jews do? Did they try to patch that? I don't know. It would be interesting if you've ever read anything. Did they try to patch that back up? Because we know that they were very traditional people. And we can go in there at any time, not just once a year. We don't have to wear special clothes. And God invites us into His most holy place. He wants us to frequent His presence. With anything that's on our mind, we can come in there at any time. Hebrews chapter 10. In our Sunday school lessons, we've been talking a lot about through the book of Hebrews and so on. And we have a better high priest now than what they did back then. Verses 19 to 25. Having therefore, brethren, that's you and I, boldness to enter into the holiest by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way which He hath consecrated for us through the veil, that is to say, His flesh. And having an high priest over the house of God, let us draw near with a true heart in full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold fast the profession of our faith without wavering, for He is faithful that promised. And let us consider one another to provoke unto love and to good works. Not forsaking the assembling ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much more as ye see the day approaching. For if we sin willfully after that we have received the knowledge of the truth, there remaineth no more sacrifice for sin. Should have stopped at verse 25. But we can go in there. And he tells us, as if this is God's let us patch, we can come in. Let us go. Let us consider one another. Let us go forth. And let us go and let us grow as we go. Lord bless you.